Hello everyone, welcome to the Reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger for Thursday, July 29th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening as always. One more hot day in store for the Fort Dodge area for Thursday. Temperatures will stay around 90 or maybe a little bit higher with heat indexes a little higher than that. And then we should see some relief come this weekend. We'll still have temperatures in the 80s, but that will be about 20 degrees cooler than it has been. So we'll take anything we can get. Also, a slight chance of rain in the forecast as well. And we'll see what comes of that when we look at a more in-depth forecast as we conclude our time together. In the meantime, we'll go over to the Messenger and take a look at what they have for us today. He's a little superhero. A Fort Dodge family turns a tragedy into a life-saving donation. There's a picture of friends and family of one-year-old Kenneth Bishop. They hold signs welcoming the parents, Tiffany Grote and TJ Bishop, back to Fort Dodge on Wednesday afternoon. Kenneth passed away unexpectedly, and his parents chose to donate his organs to help other families with sick babies. Not all superheroes wear capes. Sometimes they have a head full of blonde curls, an infectious laugh, and are gone far too soon. For two Iowa families, Iowa one-year-old Kenneth Bishop is their superhero. Kenneth, the son of Tiffany Grote and TJ Bishop of Fort Dodge, died suddenly late last week. In their grief, anger, and mourning, Grote and Bishop made a decision that something good needed to come out of their family's tragedy and have Kenneth be an organ donor. On Wednesday morning, Grote posted on her Facebook page that the baby boy who had received Kenneth's liver and kidneys had a successful transplant. On Tuesday, she posted that the baby who received Kenneth's heart also had a successful transplant. With a police escort, Grote and Bishop brought Kenneth home from Des Moines one final time on Wednesday afternoon to honor Kenneth's memory and his legacy as an organ donor. Grote's sister, April Sutterfield of Humboldt, organized family and friends to line up along Fifth Avenue South near South 32nd Street to hold signs welcoming Kenneth home. "He was so loved," Sutterfield said. "He was a fighter until the very end." She said she wanted to show love and support to Grote and Bishop as they arrived back in Fort Dodge, just to let them know that the whole community and us as a family are all right behind them and to honor Kenneth most of all. Sutterfield said, "He's a little superhero now. He is an organ donor." Dozens of friends, family, and even community members who don't even know the family turned out holding posters and green balloons in honor of organ donation. It was an outpouring of love for Kenneth and his parents. "I sat in the car and cried for about 20 minutes before I got out," Sutterfield said when she arrived and saw the turnout. "It was amazing, and it was a short amount of time to plan." Other friends and members of the Fort Dodge community have also reached out to offer support to Kenneth's family during this time. Several local kids have set up lemonade stands and donated their profits to his family. A GoFundMe page has raised over $15,000 since Sunday. "The struggle for Tiffany and TJ is indescribable, but the support that they have received from people they know and don't know is absolutely the most beautiful experience I've ever seen," Julie Spillman, Bishop's mother, said. "So many acts of random kindness." There's a picture of Ashley Valla, executive director of the Lotus Community Project, holding a sign that reads, "Baby Kenneth, you are a hero," in honor of one-year-old Kenneth Bishop, who died unexpectedly. Another photo shows Tyler Anderson, age 12, holding a sign honoring one-year-old Kenneth, while Angela Bass, 13, and Chloe Bass, age six, stand by Wednesday afternoon. There's another picture of Amara Palmer and Kira Albright, both of Fort Dodge, holding photos of one-year-old Kenneth. And there's a picture of Tiffany Grote and TJ Bishop, who are the parents, reacting as they drive by the dozens of friends, family, and community members along Fifth Avenue South to welcome him home from Des Moines. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, school board okays remote teacher contracts. Students may be back in the classroom this fall, but for some classes, students won't see their teacher in person. That's because those teachers will be providing instruction remotely through video conferencing. The Fort Dodge Community School Board of Education on Wednesday approved contracts for a high school Spanish remote teacher and a 7th grade math remote teacher for the fall semester after the district was unable to fill those positions. Superintendent Dr. Derek Joel noted that having a remote teacher for students in the classroom is not ideal, but the school year is starting in less than a month. He believes it is the best option for students at this time. Students in the classes affected will still go to class as normal. There will be a classroom monitor to take attendance and supervise while the students learn from the teacher in a live video seminar. Proximity learning will utilize our curriculum and our grading practices, Joel said. The company will also provide students any additional support needed outside of class, interact with families, and participate in teacher-parent conferences, he said. Joel said the district hopes to recruit permanent teachers for those two positions before the start of the second semester. The board approved a contract bid from a company called Proximity Learning of Austin, Texas, for $65,759.90 for the 7th grade math teacher and $49,407.92 for the high school Spanish teacher. The board also approved a $4,812.70 change order for the high school area CHVAC upgrade project. It will have to do with some additional electrical work that will need to be done in that area, explained Ryan Utley, District Director of Buildings and Grounds. In other business, the school board approved the purchase of 7 additional lunch tables for the new Early Childhood Center set to open this fall. When we got into the space, we didn't feel at the time the cafeteria was large enough to house enough students to run through lunch shifts in a reasonable time. So we have decided to have TK and preschool go into the classrooms and eat their lunch that way, Utley explained. But once the renovation of the building was complete, they realized the cafeteria was much larger than they thought. The space will be able to fit up to 168 students in each lunch shift, creating a need for more tables. Each lunch table is $2,252 for a total price of $15,764. The district will purchase the lunch tables from Premier Furniture and Equipment of Waverly, which holds the state contract for lunch table purchases. Joel also told the school board about meeting with the Webster County Health Department to discuss the return to learn plan. No decisions have been made at this point, he said. At this point, we're waiting to hear from the Department of Education and Department of Public Health, but our ultimate goal is to have communication out within a week to our staff and our families. Strawberry Field Forever is the title of the next article. Backyard berries are ready to produce fruit in Eagle Grove. The strawberries of backyard berries in Eagle Grove aren't planted on the ground like one might expect. These strawberries are planted in bags and are suspended 4 feet into the air. They are easier to work with, said Jake Wild, a 2014 Eagle Grove High School graduate. Wild is among a group of 4 couples who invested in the operation together. The group includes Wild and Maddie Walker of Eagle Grove, Clark and Lindsay Morgan of Eagle Grove, Josh and Yolanda Amundsen of Woolstock, and Jake and Emily Van Deest of Webster City. We are friends and family, said Wild, who holds a greenhouse management degree from Iowa State University. The field is located east of Central Iowa Dirt and Demo Machine Sheds at 1000 South Jackson. The property is owned by Josh Amundsen. Wild credits Jake Van Deest for the concept of the field. In October 2020, the group put a plan together. They contacted a company called Ibex Growing Systems to help with the innovative way of growing the fruit. On June 11th, planting began. All 8 of us got friends and families and members of the community to help us plant, Wild said. We had about 30 people who helped. It took us 3 days. He's grateful for the support. It took a lot of hands, Wild said. We owe the world to them for doing that. I can't imagine doing it without the help of family and friends, and it was fun to have everyone here and spending time together. Wild is the grandson of Clarence and Betty Wild, longtime owners of the Eagle Grove Greenhouse. The couple retired in recent years. In all, Wild said, there's about 12,000 strawberries that should grow. There are 30 rows of them. Every plant has its own irrigation tube. I water them in the mornings, and on hot days, they will get a second shot of water, Wild said. On Wednesday, with a heat advisory in effect, Wild said the berries would be getting an extra dose. He said each plant should produce a pound of berries. We have raspberries and blackberries as well. They won't be ready this year. This year, it's just strawberries, he said. The berries should be ready to pick by late August. That's when Backyard Berries will host its first You Pick event. We want to make it a family-friendly and inviting atmosphere, Wild said. We have containers you can put your berries in. We will weigh them and sell them by the pound. August 28 will mark the first You Pick. Backyard Berries will then host one every weekend after that during harvest. We will have fall pumpkins and hay bales. We planted sunflowers all the way around the property, but they are surrounded by weeds, so they may not pan out this year. The picking aspect should be more enjoyable than the traditional method. It's unique how they are raised up, Wild said. You don't pick them up on your hands and knees. It's exciting, and I think we are happy with where the plants are. We are ready for the berries. Wild said he likes spending time in the field. Coming out here and working is almost relaxing. We are on the edge of town. You hear nature and it's kind of relaxing. You see the green and it seems like it goes forever. Back to the main page of the Messenger. There was another house fire in Fort Dodge. Fort Dodge Fire Department responded to a fire at 212 South 16th Wednesday morning. The crews were able to extinguish the blaze and no injuries were reported. From the story, the Fort Dodge Fire Department responded to a house fire Wednesday morning at 212 South 16th Street. According to a press release from the department, homeowner Roger Peterson noticed smoke coming from a second floor bedroom and called 911 at about 9:41 a.m. Fire crews arrived on scene and worked to quickly extinguish flames in the bedroom. They were able to contain the blaze to one bedroom, preventing spread to other rooms on the second floor and the attic. One bedroom was damaged by smoke and fire. The entire second floor of the home sustained smoke damage. A window air conditioning unit was found to be the cause of the fire, the fire department reported. The Fort Dodge Fire Department was on scene for an hour and was assisted by the Fort Dodge Police Department. And there's another picture of a Fort Dodge firefighter helping to work, put out the fire at the residence. There's a new mural in town. Local artist Casey Pfeifferlick created a mural, a piece displayed at the corner of 4th Avenue North and North 9th Street. Leah Hovey and some neighborhood children have nicknamed the lot North 9th Unity Park and even started a Facebook page. Hovey and the children have been working to clean up the area, help neighbors with yard work, and create a sense of unity. Hovey has been using donations to offer snacks and cold water to anyone in need who passes by, as well as hosting small gatherings for the neighborhood. The group gave out cold water to Ragbri riders on Monday as well. Hovey said, hopefully we can bring peace and unity among everyone. It gives these kids a purpose. And there's a big picture. It looks like a red and gold sunset in the background. In the foreground, there's the hand, a white hand and a dark-skinned hand shaking hands. And at the bottom it says, unity. And there are different notes, it looks like, written on this as well. And there's a bunch of paint buckets and ladders surrounding this. And it looks like quite the nice creation. So I'll have to drive by and take a look at that sometime when I have time. We'll click where it says more local news and find that there's no more local news to read. So let's go ahead and take a look at From Our Files. From Our Files takes us back to July 2006. There's a picture of Nikki Huss and the Gales softball team. They reached the state tournament for just the second time ever, joining the 1987 squad. And again, this goes back to July 2006 when the Gales were in the state tournament. The picture of Nikki looks like she's sliding into third base and is being tagged, but it doesn't say if she was safe or out. So I guess unless you were there to see it, we'll never know. News of record for July 29th. Magistrate Court on Tuesday, Zachariah Moses Newsom, 25, Fort Dodge, hearing for August 30th, violation of probation. Catherine Goodner, 36, of Fort Dodge, hearing August 30th. Jason Harold Ferguson, 45, of Fort Dodge, hearing set for August 23rd. Driving under suspension, Javian Lamonte Davis, 24, of Fort Dodge, fined $347.50. Vincent Mendoza Zavala Jr., 52, of Fort Dodge, fined $491.25. Brandon Lee Pyland, 20, of Fort Dodge, hearing set for August 6th. Jordan Thomas Wardell, 28, of Fort Dodge, continued 180 days. Operating while under the influence, second offense. Jordan Thomas Wardell, 28, of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing waived. Operating while under the influence, first offense. Dream Son Repwalk, 30, of Fort Dodge, hearing set for August 31st. Compulsory education violation. Rebecca Wilson, 37, of Fort Dodge, 3 counts, hearing set for August 18th. Possession of drug paraphernalia. Jordan Wardell, continued 180 days. Kayla Lynn Reynolds, 34, hearing set for August 27th. Rebecca June Wilson, 37, of Mason City, hearing set for August 18th. Providing false identification. Rebecca June Wilson, hearing August 18th. Interference with official acts. Kayla Lynn Reynolds, 34, hearing August 27th. Public intox, disorderly conduct. Jacob Ray Ager, 31, of Fort Dodge, hearing on both charges on August 27th. Andre Ramirez, 35, of Clear Lake, fined $180.75 for public intoxication. Dark windshield, Brandon Pyland, hearing set for August 6th. Prohibited use of light-restricting devices. Jordan Thomas Wardell, continued 180 days. Defective muffler system. Mr. Wardell, continued 180 days. Operating without registration. Mr. Wardell, continued 180 days. Driving while barred. Brandon Wallstrom, 39, of Fort Dodge. Arraignment for August 2nd. Child endangerment causing bodily injury. Marcus Larry Lamar Cannon, 31, of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing August 6th. Driving under suspension, Brian Fievold, Fort Dodge, age 60, continued 180 days. Operating while under the influence, third offense, Mr. Fievold, 60, preliminary hearing August 13th. Operating while under the influence, second offense, William Lopez Morales, 26, of Webster City, preliminary hearing waived. Providing false identification, fraudulent use of registration, no valid driver's license. William Lopez Morales, 26, of Webster City, continued 180 days on each charge. Fifth degree theft, disorderly conduct, Nicholas Todd Jacobson, 36, of Fort Dodge, fined $180.75, paid $8 in restitution. Disorderly conduct, 7 days in jail, suspended, 1 year probation, $60 court costs. Harold Louis Bunting, 75, of Fort Dodge, disorderly conduct, hearing for August 27th. Voluntary absence from custody, David Lee Ringo, 28, of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing set for August 6th. Possession of drug paraphernalia and domestic abuse assault, Ricky Richmond Jr., 32, of Dakota City, preliminary hearing set for August 6th. The Fort Dodge police log from Monday includes 4 domestic calls, the suspicious person, 2500 block 5th Avenue South, suspicious vehicle, 1100 block 6th Avenue North, theft, 1700 block 5th Avenue South, unsupervised child, 2nd Avenue South and South 14th Street, an unknown problem in the 400 block of North 9th Street, theft, 3100 block North 15th Street, sexual assault reported, theft in the 700 block of North 15th Street, harassment in the 3100 block of North 15th Street, a runaway in the 300 block of Avenue M West, criminal mischief, 900 block North 16th Street, suspicious vehicle, Kenyon Road Bridge and Avenue C, a car accident, South 12th Street, 1st Avenue South, a car accident, South 22nd Street and 9th Avenue South, theft, Central Avenue and North 6th Street, harassment, North 8th Street, 1st Avenue North, a shoplifter, 3300 block 5th Avenue South, suspicious person near Hawkeye Avenue and 2nd Street Northwest, a suspicious person, 2000 block rather, North 15th Street, an intoxicated pedestrian, 2nd Avenue North and North 17th Street, suspicious person, 1st Avenue South and South 29th Street, an intoxicated pedestrian, 2nd Avenue North and North 15th Street, a fight in the 200 block of North 1st Street, and burglary in progress 1600 block of 9th Avenue North. On Tuesday, three domestic calls were reported. A noise disturbance near 4th Avenue North and North 9th Street. A suspicious person 300 block South 21st Street. A fight 10 block North 10th Street. Suspicious person 19th Avenue South and South 15th Street. Theft reported near Martin Luther King Drive and 10th Avenue North. Five reports of theft in the 800 block of North 25th Street. Car accident 1500 block of D Street West. Theft 100 block North 14th Street. Harassment 700 block 1st Avenue South. An unresponsive subject in the 500 block of 3rd Avenue North. Suspicious vehicle 1700 block 3rd Avenue North. A suspicious person 1600 block 1st Avenue North. Shoplifter 3100 block 5th Avenue South. A car accident 10 block of South 15th Street. An intoxicated pedestrian 700 block 1st Avenue South. A shoplifter in the 1300 block of A Street West. Harassment 2800 block 5th Avenue South. A runaway 100 block Avenue O West. Burglary 2500 block 1st Avenue South. Runaway 300 block Avenue M West. Noise disturbance 3000 block of 1st Avenue South. A runaway 300 block Haskell Street. A theft 1500 block 2nd Avenue South. A suspicious person 200 block South 25th Street. Unknown problem 1500 block 4th Avenue South. Harassment reported in the 700 block of 7th Avenue North. Criminal mischief 2200 block of 2nd and a half Avenue North. Suspicious vehicle 800 block Loomis Park Drive. Juvenile problems 300 block 7th Avenue North. And that is the police record for Monday and Tuesday. Unfortunately, I think some of those thefts were bicycles from when the Ragbri riders were in town. So I certainly hope they get their bikes back. We'll take a look next at the Daily Freeman Journal. Community building is the title of the first article. National Night Out is back on August 3rd after a year off due to the pandemic. Hamilton County residents are invited to join area law enforcement agencies on Tuesday, August 3rd for annual National Night Out planned for West Twin Park in Webster City. National Night Out is an annual community building campaign that promotes police community partnerships while bringing back a true sense of community. It is an opportunity to bring police and neighbors together under positive circumstances, said Hamilton County Sheriff Doug Timmons. Communities all over the nation participate in the annual evening of fun. The program is a community policing project that helps the community get to know us, he said, adding that the activities and attractions at the event are geared toward children, but the whole family is invited. We can build those relationships so they're not afraid of us and know that we're just like everyone else. They need to know that we're there to help when they need us, he said. The event will run from 5 to 7 and will include a meal of grilled hot dogs and brats thanks to Webster City Custom Meats, Hy-Vee, and Fairway. The Boy Scouts will help with the serving, and the Hamilton County Cattlemen will bring in their big grill for the night. Carl Chevrolet is donating ice cream treats for the event, according to Timmons. Children will have an opportunity to play in a bounce house provided by WCF Financial Bank, and the Iowa National Guard will have their climbing wall on site. In addition, the events will feature a display by participating agencies, including the Sheriff's Office, Webster City Police Department, Iowa State Patrol, Department of Natural Resources, the Iowa Motor Vehicle Enforcement, Hamilton County Conservation, Webster City Fire Department, and Van Deest Medical Center. There will be a vintage police car on display and plenty of photo opportunities, according to Timmons. We've got some music planned, and there are a few new things this year, he said. Last year's National Night Out was sidelined due to concerns about the COVID-19 pandemic. Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagy announced the 2021 sign-up period is open for statewide cost share funds to help farmers install conservation practices to improve soil health and water quality. Practices eligible for this funding are cover crops, no-till, strip-till, or using a nitrification inhibitor when applying fertilizer. 2020 was a record year for engagement in the state's conservation cost share programs, yet we still have a lot of work to do to reach our soil health and water quality goals, said Secretary Naik. I encourage all farmers and landowners to look for opportunities to add cover crops and other conservation practices to their fields. These programs are a great way to help you get started. Cover crops like rye and oats prevent soil erosion and lock in nutrients, he tried to say, especially during extreme weather events. Cover crops are proven to reduce nitrogen loads by 28-31% and phosphorus loads by 29%, which helps improve water quality. They also offer weed control for row crops and an additional forage source for cattle producers. The Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship is currently offering cost share funding for infield management practices, including planting cover crops, transitioning acres to no-till, strip-till soil management, or applying a nitrification inhibitor. Farmers who are planting cover crops for the first time are eligible for $25 per acre, and experienced cover crop users can receive $15 per acre. Producers using no-till or strip-till for the first time are eligible for $10 per acre. First-time users may also apply for a $3 per acre for applying fall fertilizer using nitropyrin-based nitrification inhibitor. Cost share funding through Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship is limited to 160 acres per farmer or landowner. The funds are available now, so don't wait too long to sign up. Farmers should contact the local Hamilton County Soil and Water Conservation District office at 1921 Superior Street in Webster City by calling the office at 515-832-2916 extension 3 to fill out an application. Farmers are also encouraged to contact their local Soil and Water Conservation District office to inquire about additional cost share opportunities available through other program sources. We'll head over next to the Marshalltown Times-Republican. An expo is held to help seniors connect with services. The annual Times-Republican Senior Expo brought local residents face-to-face with a variety of businesses and services. Moving from the mall to the new location at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, visiting seniors were able to escape Wednesday's excessive heat with free ice cream, popcorn, and lemonade, but also learning about the many professional services available to them in Marshalltown. The nice thing about the Senior Expo is that we have a great group of vendors that tailor to their needs, said advertising representative Millette Glader. Helping plan the event, Glader assisted in bringing in close to 20 vendors ranging from assisted living facilities, retirement communities, healthcare providers, and insurance companies. Glader said the purpose of the event is to help seniors interact in person with helpful services available to them in Marshalltown, while in one place, a benefit for seniors who may no longer be driving. It's one thing searching someone out, but when you have everybody here, they can go right around and speak to each of them face-to-face. You don't have to go to a bunch of different places, Glader said. We have vendors who come from the Des Moines area and around, so getting them in one location makes a huge difference to them, and it's more convenient so they can at least get information in their hands and follow up with them later. While many of the vendors tailor towards the needs of seniors, she said some of the vendors have offerings for everyone, such as the Marshall County Landfill, who provided information about recycling at the event. DJ Country Tours is a travel company providing trips to multiple destinations throughout the United States. We pick up in Marshalltown and we go anywhere from California to Utah to New England, DJ Country Tours owner and president Janine McCarthy said. She said a lot of her clients are in the senior age range, a population who wants to travel but doesn't always want to do so by car. McCarthy instead picks them up on a bus and does all the work for them. The Willows of Marshalltown, an assisted living and memory care facility in Marshalltown, handed out quite a bit of free ice cream at the event. I think it's great for the seniors to come out and socialize and see what all these people are about, the Willows of Marshalltown Facilities Director Blake Dodd said. Seniors Mary and Don Hunrickhaus attended this year's Senior Expo once again, having attended the last Expo in 2019 and were drawn back this year. As to what stood out the most to them, Don said it was the ice cream, while Mary said it was the people. Everyone has been very gracious and generous, Mary said. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will turn to today's obituary page. From Lorenz, Phyllis Anderson. Phyllis T. Anderson, 81, of Lorenz, died Monday, July 26th at her home in Lorenz. Memorial services are 1 o'clock Saturday, July 31st at Powers Funeral Home, Sacred Heart Chapel in Lorenz. There will be no burial at this time. Visitation is 4 to 6 Friday, July 30th at Powers Funeral Home. Powers Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. From Odebolt, Don Batten. Funeral services for Don Batten, 95, will be 1:30 Friday at Trinity Lutheran Church in Odebolt. Visitation is Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. at the church. Farber and Ottoman Funeral Home in Odebolt is in charge of arrangements. And that is all that we have for today's obituary page. We'll head over to the sports section next. Adams and Duster are first teamers again. Three other Dodgers flanked the Fort Dodge Senior High Battery, and Gail Krutoff was recognized as well. For the third consecutive season, the Fort Dodge Battery of Jalen Adams and Tristan Duster garnered a first-team Iowa Girls Coaches Association All-State Softball Honors. The state champion Dodgers landed 5 total players on the list, which annually recognizes the best of the best in the state's 5 prep classes. Senior Sophia Klinger, junior Tori Bennett, and 8th grader Mariah Myers were all third-team selections in Class 5A. St. Edmund senior Casey Krutoff earned honorable mention status in 1A. From the area, Humboldt senior Kendall Clark was a repeat first-team All-Stater in 3A. She was joined by Wildcat teammate Jory Hayek on the elite list. Newell Fonda teammates Ella Larson and Bailey Sievers, both seniors, landed on the first team in 1A for the Golden Mustangs. Fort Dodge Senior High head coach Andy Adams and Newell Fonda's Courtney Darrow, a former Dodger standout, were named Coaches of the Year after leading their teams to titles in 5A and 1A, respectively. Adams and Doster were dominant again for the Dodgers, who went 38-4 overall and captured the first championship in school history. The future Iowa Hawkeyes put up unparalleled numbers at their positions for the program that finished at the top of the 5A landscape. Adams, just a junior, went 25-1 overall from the pitcher's circle with a .66 earned run average. She struck out 219 batters in 159.2 innings, and opponents hit only 100 against her. Adams, the 5A All-Tournament captain, also batted .422 at the plate with 5 home runs and 28 RBI. Doster closed her prep career as the school's all-time home run leader with 37 long balls during her 5-year varsity stint. This season, Doster sported a .543 average with 13 home runs and 53 RBIs. Both Adams and Doster led all of 5A in numerous pitching and hitting categories, respectively. They are just the 4th and 5th Dodgers ever to make the first team All-State team at least 3 times, joining Morgan Paulson from 2002 through 2005, Taryn Poltratz 2007 through 2009, and Mallory Killian from 2013 through 2015. It's a moment like now where you take a step back and realize how incredibly rare all this is, Coach Adams said. Not just being first team All-State for such a long period of time the way Jalen and Tristan have been, but to perform at an elite level while touching the ball on literally every defensive play. I don't know how many batteries have been first team 3 times, but it has been a very short list. They're both tough, strong-willed, spirited players. They don't always get along, but it's because they're incredibly competitive and want what's best for the program. They want to win. This individual stuff is nice, of course, but it takes a backseat to what they just accomplished last Friday with their friends and teammates. Adams had mixed emotions about her other All-Staters. She was ecstatic for Klinger, always a defensive stalwart who transformed herself into a complete player through hard work and sheer will at the plate. Klinger, a four-year starter in the outfield, hit .425 in 2021. Sophia became what I called a self-made hitter, Adams said. She decided to put the work at the softball connection and even at home. Look at her now. I'm just ecstatic for her. She's walked away from her high school experience as an all-stater and as a state champion. Adams' mood shifted, though, when discussing Bennett's third-team assignment for the second consecutive season. Let me just put it this way. If there are two better shortstops top to bottom or that many better infielders out there in 5A, I'd like to see them, Adams said. I'm both frustrated and disappointed. I know there aren't any guarantees with this, and there's very little you can do about it, but to say Torrey isn't at least a second-teamer is ridiculous in my book. But I know Torrey. It will only motivate her and fuel her going into her senior year. Bennett batted .455 with 36 RBI, a team-high 50 runs scored, 23 stolen bases. She also committed only two errors for a fielding percentage of .981. Myers became just the fourth eighth grader in program history to attain all-state status before ever setting foot on campus at senior high. She was among the state's leaders in RBIs with 57, the second highest total season in school history, behind only Paulson's 58 while hitting .431 with 7 home runs. Myers joins Adams' third team All-State as an 8th grader in 2018, Paulson in 2001, Diane Peterson in 2001, an exclusive, precocious Dodger company. Mariah made it look easy, and it's not, especially for a kid her age at the 5A level, Coach Adams said. She's an incredible talent. She's only committed two errors in the field at catcher and at first base, and like T.K. Doster, didn't strike out once. The offensive numbers are incredible, of course, but her advanced understanding of the strike zone, her overall patience, and what she gave us in the field, really just an amazing year, and she's just getting started. Clark batted .506 with 11 home runs, 14 doubles, 42 runs scored, and 29 RBI for Humboldt. Hayek hit .438 with 5 homers, 35 RBI, 43 runs, and 11 triples. Sievers was a repeat first-teamer after carrying a .395 average with 56 runs and 30 RBIs for Newell Fonda, which finished 38-4 overall. Larson returned to the All-State squad. She didn't make it last summer, but had been honored twice before after hitting .446 with 4 homers and 47 driven in. Mustang ace freshman Kira Jungers, who went 29-3 from the pitcher's circle with a 1.03 earned run average and 264 strikeouts, landed on the second team. Teammate Maggie Walker was a third team pick. Krutoff, a 5-year starter for the Gales, batted .360 with 14 doubles and 19 RBIs. St. Edmund went 16-11 overall. North Union, which reached the 2A state field, had 3 first-team selections. Emily Meyer, Olivia Von Bank, and Sam Nielsen all are slated to return for the Warriors in 2022. Kelly Stokes of Webster City made the third squad in 4A. Lillian Etherington of Algona was a third-team honoree in 3A, as was Emma Anderson of South Central Calhoun in 2A. Bailey Meister of Bishop Garrigan was an honorable mention selection in Class 1A. We'll head next to the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal. The 2021 Daily Freeman Journal Female Athlete of the Year is Kelly Stokes. Kelly Stokes sits inside the third base dugout and stares out at an empty softball field as the powerful July sun bakes the dirt and grass. It's a field she's owned, metaphorically speaking, for the past 4 seasons that likely won't change much a year from now. The Webster City senior-to-be is one of the best softball players ever to come through the legendary program, a fact known to so many that have switched and studied the game over the years. And yet she remains unconvinced, if for no other reason than to keep that edge she needs to continue to thrive. She's never studied her own statistics. She doesn't get caught up in records or accolades. Maybe one day, but not now, not in the moment. I make it a point to not look at Varsity Bound, to not even read articles during the season, she said. I don't want to look at numbers because they might consume me, and I don't want my mindset to be about me. I could be hitting .700, and if the team is losing, then that's a loss for me. The numbers do tell a story, though, one of greatness that doesn't come along all that often, not just this year, but in past years too. Stokes is a softball player. She doesn't shy away from that moniker, but she's plenty versatile, a starter on the volleyball and basketball courts too, where she played pivotal roles for the Lynx during the 2021 school year. Put it all together, and the success is undeniable, and it's why today she becomes the eighth girl bestowed with the honor of being named the Daily Freeman Journal Female Athlete of the Year. It's pretty cool, and it also shows how many people have helped me to get here, she said, of winning the award. I don't even really consider this my own award. Everybody, coaches, teammates, my parents, gets a piece of it, and it shows that you can play multiple sports and succeed at all of them. Jess Howard has coached Stokes in volleyball and softball ever since she burst onto the scene as a quiet and massively talented eighth grader in the summer of 2018. She has studied the softball numbers and knows firsthand just how special her pupil is, but she says it's what nobody sees that sets Stokes apart from many of her contemporaries. She's one of those kids that is always doing the right things when no one is watching, and that's what makes the difference, Howard said. She's doing it for herself and for her teammates to get to that next level, and she's just a very well-rounded athlete. She's an excellent softball player, but is also very much needed on the volleyball and basketball courts. She understands the games, knows the situations, and knows what to do. Stokes capped her junior year by leading Webster City High School to its first North Central Conference softball championship in 8 seasons, and a strong case could be made that she was the league's best player. In the leadoff spot, she hit .458 with 4 home runs and 29 RBIs, and in just her second season behind the plate, she became a catcher who opposing base runners feared. But it's that flawless left-handed swing that makes people stand up and take notice. Naturally right-handed, she makes it look so easy, and it doesn't matter where the ball is thrown. She can hit for power to every field, which is a big reason why so many teams simply attempt to pitch around her. That swing is a point of pride for Stokes, who has spent countless hours perfecting it inside the cages at Diamond in the Rough, the facility her family owns on the south side of Webster City. Her mom, Kim, a former college softball player at Drake, has helped her craft it. This is hours upon hours of repetition with the Kim Stokes, Stokes said with a chuckle. It's a lot of drills and muscle memory. Her twin brother Devon has been both an inspiration and motivator as well. A 2-time All-NCC catcher on the baseball squad at Diamond, or on the baseball diamond rather, he was who Stokes turned to when she was asked to make the switch to behind the plate in 2020. We're always feeding off each other for sports and academically as well, Stokes said. We're also each other's biggest cheerleaders because we're not competing against each other on the same team. And when I moved to catcher, Devon was my biggest help. He's still better than me too, I'll admit that. She already owns the single season school record for batting average, .521, set in 2019. And next season, she'll attempt to take down perhaps the most coveted record, the career batting average of mark of .432, held by Jenna Flora since 2002. Stokes sits with a career average of .458 through 4 seasons and needs 52 hits in 2020 to reach 200. But all of that can wait. For now, she'll shift her focus to the upcoming volleyball season as well as the various other clubs she takes part in. In addition to being a lifeguard and working at Briggs Woods Conference Center, she's involved in Student Senate, Student Council, FFA, and National Honor Society, where she serves as president. She may even attempt to play golf for the first time next spring. Softball is her passion, but it's not everything. For me, the other sports are about being a part of a different team. It's different environments, and they're a lot of fun. As a senior, I want to do everything I can. I want to hit all my maxes in the weight room, and I want to be that leader for the team and do the best that I can so that everybody else can as well. Stokes would like to play college softball, something she's more than capable of doing as long as she finds the right fit. I have started talking to a few different coaches, but I don't want to sacrifice my education just to go play somewhere, she said. The Lynx field playing surface remained quiet as Stokes eased herself off the bench and left the dugout on her way to her car and into her senior season. But she'll be back next summer, a year older, stronger, and wiser. The possibilities are endless. Trevor Thompson was able to put his South Hamilton football helmet on one final time inside the Uni Dome Saturday night as he helped the North team earn a victory at the Shrine Bowl. The annual All-Star Game features the top senior football players in the state, and they went on for the North to win 52-24 over the South. Thompson, a Class 2A All-State linebacker who will continue his football career at Upper Iowa University in the fall, was named the defensive captain of the North team on Friday. Notable Arthur, Battle Creek Ida Grove graduate, and future Iowa Hawkeye Cooper DeGene was the offensive captain, and he put on a show to help his team win. He led the North to tossing three touchdown passes in the second half. Thompson was a leader on both sides of the ball for South Hamilton last fall as he helped to lead the Hawks to an unbeaten regular season and an 8-1 overall record. At running back, Thompson rushed for 1,326 yards and 17 touchdowns. As a senior, he averaged 6.9 yards per carry. On the defensive side of the ball, Thompson collected a team-high 55 tackles, including 33 solo stops and 5 tackles for a loss. Lick your wounds briefly, Lynx, and then celebrate. The senior class isn't big, but what an impact it had is an article in the Daily Freeman Journal. Chase Rattenborg was out of his uniform and about ready to leave the ballpark Wednesday night, but not before he made one more stop. I watched him as he walked towards Addison Kehoe down the first baseline, and one thing stood out, the big smile on his face. Rattenborg threw his head coach in a bear hug and elevated him off the ground. He slapped his back twice and held on as Kehoe's legs remained off the ground. He didn't want to let go. To do so would be to say goodbye to the man and to the season. But eventually, Rattenborg dropped him, and the smile was even wider this time. And in that moment, I knew that the pain had already begun to subside for the members of the Webster City baseball team, and in its place was going to be long bouts of reflection, as it should be. No one wanted to see the season end short of the Class 3A state tournament, and certainly not in a nightmare scenario that was the ninth inning in a 9-3 loss to Waverly Shellrock in the sub-state final. But as I've said many times before, sports can be cruel, and come next week, only 4 teams in the state will be able to say they staved off the pain that the Lynx felt following the loss to the Gohawks. Rattenborg and his 3 senior class teammates, Tyler Olson, Trey Lyons, and Sean Carver, certainly have nothing to be ashamed of. Quite the opposite, actually. Be proud, guys, and don't ever regret a moment in that uniform. You helped elevate the Webster City High School program, and combined, you were the North Star for the greatest Lynx team I've ever covered. And yes, that includes the 2007 team that reached the state tournament. No offense to that group, but I'd take this one by a couple runs in a mythical meeting. I just tell them that I love them and say thank you, said Webster City High School junior catcher Devon Stokes, said when asked about the team's seniors. Rattenborg and Lyons truly were the missing pieces, a fact that wasn't known until they decided to come out of baseball retirement and join the team as juniors in 2020. Neither had thrown a glove on since the 8th grade, and yet they fit in and thrived immediately. Rattenborg brought fire and intensity, a good bat and solid glove, and Robin mentality to Olsen's Batman on the mound. He put together a 10-1 record and a 1.99 ERA in 2 seasons on the bump, throwing a career .323 batting average, and you start to wonder just how good his numbers would have been over a 4-year career. Lyons brought a fantastic glove to second base and stability, where he hit .312 over 2 seasons. And yeah, he could pitch too, a 7-2 record with 50 strikeouts over 45 2/3 innings. Would Webster City have been good these last 2 seasons had they opted to stay outside the fence? Sure. But would the Lynx have rolled to back-to-back North Central Conference titles and a 26-2 record in 2021 without them? It's an easy answer, no. They were a crucial part of this, Stokes said. They didn't need to come back, but they wanted to be a part of the team, and we needed them. A 3-year starter in the outfield, Carver was more than a dependable bat and solid glove man. Time after time, when Webster City needed a big hit, it always seemed like he was willing and able to deliver. How he kept finding his way into the batter's box in those moments I'll never know, but he was the definition of clutch. His career included a .328 batting average and 58 RBIs. And then there's Olson, who is the GOAT of Webster City High School baseball over the past two decades. That's no disrespect to his own coach, who is pretty good himself, or guys like Alex Davis or Dylan Steen. But when it comes to the guy that could do everything, it's Olson in the debate. The numbers are stupid. A 27-1 record on the mound with a .63 ERA, 273 strikeouts against just 35 walks. He averaged 1.5 strikeouts per inning over 881 innings, and he allowed only 16 earned runs. When he wasn't pitching, Olson looked like a college player at shortstop, so smooth to the point of looking effortless. Throw in a .394 batting average with 106 career hits, and his resume is as good as I've ever covered. What's fun about that kid in particular is that I'm not sure his stats will ever be replicated, and he's genuinely just a nice kid. Kehoe said, he's a great baseball player and an even better kid. This was just a fun team both to be around and watch on the field. It was loud and maybe a little cocky, but both of which are just fine because the players worked their behinds off for everything they earned. And this fact was pointed out to me, I can't take the credit, of the team's 15 members, 12 of them are 3- and 4- sport athletes, and 13 play multiple sports, 9 never take a season off. That's commitment and dedication and whatever other platitude you want to throw their way. This team deserves to be celebrated, and it will be a benchmark for that future Lynx teams will try to reach. Falling one step short of the state tournament won't change this. We're going to go ahead and head over to this date in history. It is July 29th, and on this date in history in 1958, NASA was created when Congress passed legislation establishing the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, a civilian agency responsible for coordinating America's activities in space. On this date in 1967, the Doors scored their first number one hit with Light My Fire. On this date in 2000, Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston were married. In 1862, Confederate spy Bell Boyd was captured. In 1900, an Italian-American assassinated an Italian king. In 1976, it was reported that Son of Sam was terrorizing the city of New York. In 1588, the Spanish Armada was defeated. On this date, 1981, Prince Charles married Lady Diana. On this date, 1909, General Motors purchased Cadillac. In 1996, Carl Lewis wins his fourth consecutive long jump at the age of 35. In 1965, the 101st Airborne Division arrived in Vietnam. And in 1967, a rocket caused a deadly fire on an aircraft carrier. In 1914, Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany and Tsar Nicholas of Russia exchanged telegrams. And on this date in 1921, Adolf Hitler became the leader of the Nazi Party. And that is just a brief look at things that happened on this date, July 29th. Looking at the weather forecast, it's 83 degrees in Fort Dodge as I read this. For Friday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a 50% chance with a high of 80 degrees. Rain chances increase Friday night with a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms. We'll sure take the rain, a low of 62. Mostly cloudy Saturday, high of 85, low of 57. Sunday, beautiful. Clear skies, high of 82, a low of 54. Monday, gorgeous, high of 81, low of 57. Tuesday, partly cloudy, high of 83. Tuesday night, Tuesday, high of 83, low of 58. On Wednesday, partly cloudy skies and 83 degrees. So the rain chances are Friday and Friday night, maybe into Saturday morning. We'll keep our fingers crossed because we could sure use the rain. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Couldn't remember what my name was for a second. Thanks so much for spending this time with me. Of course, this podcast and many other awesome podcasts are available to you at iowaradioreading.org, and we certainly encourage you to enjoy our podcasts. We also appreciate your continued support of IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, and we look forward to the next time when we bring IRIS to you. Stay safe, stay healthy. Probably still need to stay cool, even though the temperatures are going to drop a little bit. Take good care of yourselves, my friends, and we'll talk to you again real soon, right here on IRIS.